WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. This break between the Thomas confirmation hearings and the Senate vote tomorrow has left most Americans talking about little else. In this half hour of Fresh Air, we'll discuss a number of viewpoints. First, feminist journalist Barbara Ehrenreich. She's an essayist for Time magazine. I asked her if she had been the victim of sexual harassment, would she be likely to file charges after watching these hearings?
I think you could say that the hearings send a message to American women. This is sad because it started out being our big national consciousness raising on sexual harassment. But the message, at least from the Republican senators to all kinds of women, is be careful. Just, you know, this is the kind of thing you might get if you speak up. But, you know, women already know that. We know how much is at stake. We know how our careers could be damaged. I don't think that the senators will ever understand that and ever comprehend why Anita Hill, like so many victims of sexual harassment, never says anything, and not only never says anything, but may maintain a fiction of friendship with the harasser.
Some of the senators, particularly Senator Hatch, had a hard time comprehending how a woman would continue to work with a man who had made advances toward her and had used language about pornography in speaking with her. Did you find it hard to understand how elected politicians who glad-hand people who they despise all the time would have a hard time understanding how someone would continue to work with someone who had harassed her?
That's a good point, Terry. You made the point. I was thinking more of my own experiences, and I've had experiences being what I realize now is sexual harassment. We didn't have the name for it then in the 60s and 70s. And where I was so ashamed and so hurt and sort of kept saying, you know, did I cause this? Did I send the wrong signals? Did I do something? I must have done something wrong. That my impulse was to paper over the situation and pretend it didn't happen, not only for the sake of that man involved, but for my own dignity. I had to pretend it didn't happen and try to maintain a working and even sort of nominally friendly relationship.
Was that hard to do?
Well, I realized a lot of teeth gritting was involved, but that, you know, it was too hard to acknowledge how degraded I felt. It was too hard to say, you know, the way you were treated means you are not really seen as a fellow professional by these people, these men. You are seen as a sexual object, as a piece, as a whatever. And that you don't want to acknowledge even to yourself sometimes.
One of the things that made these hearings extraordinary was the kind of language that was used about penis size and pornography and so on. And the senators, in quoting the language, seemed to be, well, so reluctant to use the words, almost prudish about it. I was wondering what you thought about that.
Well, they got out the word breast all right. They had trouble with the word penis, which became private parts, if you'll notice. Yeah, I think there was a certain sexual bias there, gender bias.
What were your reactions to the panels of witnesses, the panel testifying on behalf of Anita Hill and the panels testifying on behalf of Clarence Thomas?
Well, I think my bias is more toward believing Anita Hill at this point and out of not only female solidarity, but also because Clarence Thomas came out of the first round of hearings with his credibility damaged. And this was the word on him, that here was a man who would not stand by the opinions that he had espoused over the years, the radical right-wing opinions. He would not stand by them. He said he had never discussed abortion or Roe versus Wade or even thought about them ever. So he's a man who came back as a kind of a tabula rasa and who was willing to renounce his past. Now, it bothers me that Clarence Thomas from round one has been was sort of forgotten when he began to get emotional about how damaged he was. If he could no longer stand by his political opinions and philosophies of the past, why would he acknowledge to some really some, you know, scurrilous behavior and words from the past? So I did not start having a great sense that that he was a very credible person himself, and I started with a stronger, you know, predisposition to listen and very openly to Anita Hill.
I think any journalist is used to asking questions themselves. Did you have any frustrations with the line of questioning used by the Democratic and Republican senators?
Well, Democrats have been limp noodles. I mean, once again, you know, whenever you put a great issue in front of Democrats and there's something about them, they run away from it. They have not been strong. The strong people on the committee have been Hatch and Specter, and both of them behaving as if they were members of the Inquisition, you know, from the 15th century, I think, acting as if this were a trial, giving completely out of line.
When you say acting as if it's a trial, do you mean?
Trial of Anita Hill. You know, that's one of the funny things. You know, when Anita Hill was testifying the first time, the big issue with the senators was her credibility. The next day, Clarence Thomas came back, and the big issue was again Anita Hill's credibility. So what we should come out of this with, really, when you think about it, is some judgment of whether Anita Hill should be on the Supreme Court. I mean, it's totally focused on her. The issues of Clarence Thomas's credibility have been, in some gentlemanly fashion, pushed aside.
Since just about everyone in America seems to have watched these hearings, do you think that men and women might be behaving a little differently toward each other in the workplace now?
Yes, I think one of the things that's been going on is that men who are sensitive, men who want to be in tune with women, have been saying to their lovers, wives, colleagues, please tell me exactly where is the line? You know, what is it? And we're beginning to get the basis of some understanding. Now, most men really know when they've crossed the line. It's no big mystery, because so much harassment is just so gross and crude. But I think that a real positive step has been taken in an awful lot of workplaces. I think that part of it's great.
Anything you'd like to add before we have to wrap
up? I'll tell you, if they confirm him, I've already heard women saying they're just going to get on the first vehicle they can and converge on Washington and go crazy. I mean, we will feel, I think, so left out and so unheard. Many, many American women.
Barbara Ehrenreich, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Barbara Ehrenreich is an essayist for Time magazine. Her latest collection of essays is called The Worst Years of Our Lives. Michelle McQueen is a reporter and White House correspondent for The Wall Street Journal. She spent the weekend sampling African-American opinions on the Thomas hearings. She found that some African-Americans are saying Anita Hill shouldn't have broken rank with the African-American community by coming forward with charges of sexual harassment against Clarence Thomas.
There is a sense among Black Americans that racial solidarity is very important. I don't think that's unreasonable to say that. I think that a lot of people feel that as a minority group, as a group that has received a lot of poor treatment in this country because of their racial background, that there is a need and it is desirable for Black people to stick together, as it were. And some people, and I must tell you that this attitude is among both men and women that I interviewed over the weekend, are very angry with Anita Hill. They say that even if her allegations were true, she should have avoided bringing them to light because it's A, embarrassing to Black people in general, and B, because it could derail the election of this man to the nation's highest court, and he's only the second Black man in history to be nominated to the Supreme Court. And this is sufficiently important to Black people and to the progress of Black people in this country that she should have basically just kept her mouth shut.
What kind of reactions did you find among the people you spoke to and the people who you've been overhearing? Reactions to Judge Thomas's statement on Saturday that these hearings had become a high-tech lynching for uppity Blacks.
Again, a very controversial statement, which resonated rather deeply on both sides of the question. I interviewed a number of people who thought that this was correct. They felt that he was being lambasted. He was the target of these painful allegations because some people, some group, some unknown group of people opposed him because he was black. He is black. Now, I must say that I think that that a lot of people probably had very little awareness of either of these individuals before this whole situation came to light. I would bet you if you ask most people, if you took a survey of most people and said, who are these people, a minority of people would know who Judge Thomas was, simply because it just isn't the kind of thing that's on everybody's radar screen. Now, if your first awareness of him is that he's making these allegations of being lynched, and if you don't really know anything about him either way, and if you, you know, if you are the type of person to believe that black people are generally subjected to unfair treatment in the society, then you can see why that argument would resonate with some people, and it has. Conversely, some people are deeply offended at his appropriation of this very powerful metaphor because they have pointed out that he has testified that should he not receive this nomination, he will go back to his very pleasant life as a Court of Appeals judge, a very high and distinguished position in this country with lifetime tenure, that he will go back to his house. And in his own words, I will drive my car, I'll go to McDonald's, I'll cut my lawn, I'll enjoy my neighbors, I'll enjoy my life. And several people spoke to me and said, this is just outrageous. When a person is truly lynched, they are dead. And so some people were deeply offended at this. And they were also offended simply because they correctly point out that Judge Thomas has resisted this kind of racial metaphor for other people. He has criticized black leaders for constantly crying racism, he feels, whenever they see an injustice is being done. Sometimes he says that, you know, that just isn't the issue. So it's a very powerful image to invoke, and it has evoked some very strong reactions on both sides.
What are some of the greatest divisions you found among the people you spoke to about reaction to Anita Hill's testimony?
You mean among African Americans,
yeah,
specifically? It's been very divided. It also, it has to do with some hierarchy of values. I mean, some people said that, you know, racial solidarity and the advancement of black people as a group should come before all of these things, and that if anybody gets a chance to be on the Supreme Court, everybody should support him no matter what. That's a little bit of a simplification, but not much of one. And other people said, well, you know, this woman's dignity has got to be just as important as his advancement, and therefore she should have come forward. Very complex, very deeply held feelings, a lot of resentment, for example, about just the fact that the allegations had been aired so publicly. It's very uncomfortable, I find, for most black people that I interviewed. Just the fact that it has to be discussed that this man is alleged to have done these particular things, it suggests for some black people that, you know, it reinforces this very negative stereotype of black people as sexually bizarre, as aggressive, as preoccupied with sexual matters to the exclusion of other things in the workplace. And this, I find, has touched a very raw nerve among people, and who aren't even necessarily taking a position about who they believe, but they find it deeply embarrassing, and they certainly wish it hadn't happened. If there's any unanimity on one thing, I think it is the belief that that they wished that this had been done more privately. A lot of criticism about the way the Senate allowed these allegations to go on uninvestigated, or at least not investigated thoroughly, in a way that caused this whole thing to come to light publicly. And there's a great deal of anger about that, but not just among African Americans, but among Americans in general. But the pain of it for African Americans is that they feel that this reinforces some negative stereotypes that they think are sort of out there anyway.
Are there things that you think white people just don't get about the way African Americans are viewing the proceedings?
Well, I don't know. Perhaps I think that in general, just as men don't necessarily understand why women feel threatened by certain behaviors, I would guess that perhaps white Americans don't understand why black people who are uninvolved in this controversy would feel so threatened by it and so angry about it, and why the whole issue of stereotyping is so powerful for them. I mean, I can see why. If you don't feel that you are, when you go out and you get your parking ticket, or when you get into a traffic accident, or when you fail a class, if you don't feel that you're representing all white people, I would believe that generally white people think they're representing themselves as individuals, and they rise and fall on their own merit. And I think that perhaps it's unclear to them how black people often feel that whether it's fair or not, that they are being viewed as representatives of a group. And that is a source of much tension and anxiety for black people sometimes. And I can see that as a difference. I don't know that it's that But I think that in this instance, this is so uncomfortable and painful for so many people on so many levels. I mean, workplaces throughout, you know, families are roiled by this, that you know, everybody's got a lot of angst to deal with here.
Did you get any sense of anger at President Bush in choosing a black man to nominate for the Supreme Court, choosing the wrong black man? I've heard that expressed, you know, that it's...
Well, yeah, that's a good point. I'm glad you brought that out, which is that a number of people said that if Thomas's backers ought to be mad at anybody, they ought to be mad at President Bush. And this is all coming from African Americans, let's point out, who are saying that he selected Judge Thomas because he is a black person with conservative values, and if he were white, he would not have been selected, because he's very young, he's 43 years old, he's got limited judicial experience. He is a very bright and charismatic figure, no doubt, but there is a certain sentiment among some people that he was chosen for certain symbolic value, and that it isn't merely the strength of his legal scholarship or, you know, something particularly germane to being on the court. And so for that reason, I've heard a number of commentators make this point. In fact, I heard on Black Entertainment Television, a number of commentators who are black say that if anybody ought to be the target of people's anger, it ought to be President Bush for choosing him for these cynical reasons. But like I hear again, some people are grateful. They're glad, just even if he's a conservative, and if they are not, some people feel that the experience of being black in America is sufficiently powerful that view needs to be represented on the court, and are just grateful that it would be represented, even if they don't like all of his politics.
Okay. Thank you very much for talking with
us. Thank you. Okay.
Okay.
Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye. Michelle McQueen is a reporter at the Wall Street Journal. We'll hear from a couple of editorial cartoonists after the short break. This is Fresh Air. Everybody at work has been talking about the Thomas hearings. In yesterday's Philadelphia Inquirer, Pulitzer Prize-winning cartoonist Tony Auth had a cartoon about the effects of the hearings on sexual politics in the office. I'll let Tony Auth describe it.
Well, the cartoon was a picture of an office and everyone apparently going about their business. However, they are dressed in medieval armor, and the symbols on their armor are either the male or female sex symbols. And I believe one of the women is saying the office dynamic has been altered by the Thomas hearings.
Is that what you think is happening, that people are going to be, like, so afraid in the office after the Thomas hearings that it will be as if they're wearing armor?
Well, I don't know how long it'll last, but it was certainly the way it was around here on Friday.
No kidding, really?
Well, you know, I exaggerate to some extent, probably, except I did notice that one man tried to make a joke about what was going on in an elevator and got called on it by a woman who was in the elevator.
Let's see, what was the joke?
Well, I wasn't present. I just heard about it.
Okay.
And I also noticed that both men and women were looking back over their own behavior and the behavior of their friends and associates, I think asking themselves how it would hold up if it were illuminated in the kind of glare that we saw in the hearings.
As a man, have you been feeling more awkward or self-conscious in the past few days?
No. I think it's pretty clear when someone crosses the line and, you know, becomes a sleaze.
Tony Auth, thanks very much.
Thank you, Terry.
Tony Auth is editorial cartoonist with the Philadelphia Inquirer. Signe Wilkinson is editorial cartoonist at the Philadelphia Daily News. I asked her to describe one of her cartoons from the final round of hearings.
In the middle of last week, I did a cartoon in which Judge Thomas is surrounded by TV cameras, newspaper reporters, lights, and in the back of the crowd there's one lone woman with a pro-choice button, and she's kind of calling out over the crowd, "So, Judge Thomas, now can you tell us your views on the right to privacy?"
And what were you thinking of?
What I was thinking of was the first round of hearings in which he had nothing to say on any subject, including privacy. It's my feeling, frankly, that one of the reasons everybody was so upset about this not coming forward in the first place is we didn't know anything about Judge Thomas. We didn't know his views on anything. He wouldn't say what his views are, and he doesn't have any kind of record to speak of, so, and what record there is, he contradicted, so no one knew what they were voting on one way or the other. And the good thing about these hearings, the one small good thing that I can see is that on Saturday, he said to the committee that he had a new appreciation of the right to privacy, and he certainly didn't want anyone poking their noses into his bedroom. I assume that he'll offer the rest of us that right as well.
So what are you working on for tomorrow?
Well, I have one in which there's a man standing in front of his, in the doorway of his Dr. Dirt's X-rated peep parlor, looking across the street at Dan's TVs, where there's a huge crowd of people looking at all the televisions in the window, which are all tuned into the hearings. And the man in Dr. Dirt's is saying, I can't wait till these hearings are over, because his place is empty. But I'd also, I'm also thinking of doing one about, just about the process itself and the sort of the all-white, all-male nature of the panel that's up there.
Do you know what that would look like, the cartoon? You don't have to say if you don't want to.
Well, I sort of, I mean, one thing that both Anita Hill and Clarence Thomas must agree on is she thinking there are no women on the Senate panel, and he thinking there are no blacks on the Senate panel, and them both thinking they just don't get it.
Signe Wilkinson, thank you very much.
Thank you, Terry.
Signe Wilkinson is editorial cartoonist with the Philadelphia Daily News. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.